Thanks. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Nell Brownstein and Diane Madsen-Kaufman at the Centers for Disease Control, and Justin Trogdon and others at RTI who are really our cost effectiveness gurus. I want to talk a little bit about this project and talk about how cost effectiveness methods may apply to other kinds of quality improvement or transformation efforts. What we did, the purpose of our project was really, what I want to talk about today is I want to give a very quick review of what cost effectiveness is, how we do it and why we do it. I think everybody's probably heard of the chronic care model. It's fairly ubiquitous, so we don't need to spend much time on that. And I want to go through the results and the conclusions that we found during our study. And that's, just went through that. The purpose of our CDC project was to really try to figure out how the chronic care model is implemented in federally qualified health centers and really assess whether how the implementation is cost effective. Very hard thing to do because the chronic care model, as some may say, is really the kitchen sink of lots of different things. And our approach was really to look at what was implemented, how it was implemented, with a focus on an expanded set of services. And that's a little bit different than what practice transformation is all about. Practice transformation is about affecting everything that is done in a setting. And we sort of focused on what is the cost effectiveness of the additional services, and that was kind of by necessity. We did focus on blood pressure and cholesterol because that's where the project came out of at the CDC Center for Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention. That's the chronic care model. If people haven't seen it, it's designed to be a model for re-engineering primary care across several dimensions to lead to better interactions between doctors and patients. What we did is we conducted case studies at two health centers, one in California, one in Massachusetts, found out what we did, found out what they did, and we used the RAND Corporation's chronic care model coding scheme. There are about 60, 70 different things that can be considered part of the chronic care model. We gave it to the health centers and said, which one of these things you do and how did you actually do it? And then we sort of studied that with them, and we also tried to figure out, well, what did it cost to do these kinds of things? And we worked with the accounting staff and the providers on that. We also extracted data from electronic disease registers, namely the PECS registry or the electronic medical record systems that were in place, to try to find out who was exposed or who actually took advantage of these expanded services. And what were the attributable changes in those clinical indicators? Those two efforts, attributing changes in clinical indicators to any kind of intervention, particularly in a primary care setting, very, very tricky, very, very challenging to do. We didn't solve it, as you'll see, but have some comments on it. Once we got the changes in clinical indicators and tried to attribute them to the chronic care model or the chronic care model-like services that were implemented, we wanted to compare that to how people who didn't get these services, people in usual care. And then we took these differences and we ran them through a cost-effectiveness simulation model that we built. It's the first one that at least RTI has been involved in, whether it's a cardiovascular model. We have a larger model that is known as the CDC-RTI diabetes model. We've been working on that with them for years, but this is our first time to look at really and build a cardiovascular model. It's sort of a first-generation one. And from that model, we get out of it, as with all cost-effectiveness studies, a number which is the cost-effectiveness ratio, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Basically, what it does is we have some sort of intervention, and that intervention leads to different kinds of things. There are operational costs involved with running different kinds of services, and then when you bring people into care, guess what? They come to additional doctor's visits. They need prescriptions. They fill their prescriptions. So from a societal perspective, and that's the perspective we typically take, these kinds of things do cost money above and beyond what the programs actually run. Then what we do is we look at all the costs and the changes, and we say, well, what does that mean in the future? We don't have many long-term studies in the world that will tie a blood pressure or cholesterol level to end-stage renal disease, to heart attacks and strokes. We have a couple. One is a Framingham Heart Study, and that's where our models are based on. So we look at what would be the incidence of adverse events down the road in the future under usual care, and what would be the incidence of adverse events in the future based on this chronic care model programs that we're running at these health centers. And the difference is the result of the simulation. What cost effectiveness is not? It is not return on investment. It is looking at long-term outcomes attributable to clinical indicators. You can go to the Framingham website, I think, put in your BMI, put in your weight, put in your age, put in your blood pressure. It'll give you your probability of heart attacks and strokes in 10 years. That's what we're doing. A lot of people these days are really interested in return on investment kinds of studies. It's a little bit of a different animal. It would, those kinds of studies want to know what the return on investment is, and usually in terms of hospitalizations and ED visits and things like that. ROI studies usually ask the question, will the healthcare intervention pay for itself? That's not really the question we're asking. Often you'll see it done by HMOs, insurers, Medicaid, Medicare. Everybody's interested in saving money. Very few interventions actually do. Pediatric immunizations do save money. Again, cost effectiveness analysis, I'm going to skip over these slides very quickly. We try to answer the question, how much do gains in health costs? In this case, how much did the services that were provided under the chronic care model really cost? They did cost money. People did have improved clinical indicators. Those did translate to fewer adverse events down the road, according to our simulation. But on the cost side, you also have to realize that you're paying for multiple years for prescriptions, for doctor's visits, for the programs. It's very hard to offset that by saving a few strokes or heart attacks in 10 years. And it's this balancing that cost effectiveness is all about. Let's skip over this slide. Some examples of cost effectiveness studies here and what the dollar amounts are. In the first example, coronary artery bypass surgery for men is the cost per quality adjusted life year is about $40,000. Sometimes a benchmark of $50,000 is used. We'd never think of taking away that benefit. It does cost money. We think it's worth it from a societal perspective. Now some of our results, a little bit about what's implemented. And these things are fairly typical of what community health centers have done, in my opinion. They offer lots of walk-in, drop-in sessions. They provide a lot of education. They use lay health workers, and they try to draw community linkages, all kinds of strategies to really engage patients. All could fit into different pieces of the chronic care model if you tried to map it, and some people have tried to do that and have. The California site had a very interesting project. They developed a concept called a panel manager, who actually called and hounded patients and developed sort of an outreach infrastructure to keep track of patients. What we did then is, after capturing the direct costs for running the services, we did not capture the direct treatment costs from the health centers, those costs associated with all the extra prescriptions, all the extra doctor's visits. But we did run our simulations at different cost points in an effort to try to capture that. This is an example of our differences and differences approach, where we benchmark the changes that we observed against usual care. And it's a fairly common approach for people to use. There may be better approaches. It's the one we happen to use. And this one is related to changes in cholesterol. We saw changes in cholesterol both in the usual care group and in the chronic care model group. The changes were greater in the chronic care model group. These changes, the difference in difference results are in the last two columns at the right. Modest improvements in the clinical indicators, that's what really drives those longer term events. The long-term adverse events that we modeled are myocardial infarctions, end-stage renal disease, and life expectancy. And these are costly things, but they happen in the future. They're still costly. Our results at different cost points and at different changes in the clinical indicators and at different time horizons vary widely. That's the point. Those are parameters that are very hard to measure, very hard to measure well, and really drive the results. And you get a big changes in your results depending on what assumptions you make. And you can never work hard enough to measure these kinds of things. I've been through this before about the whole balancing of short-term costs with the savings accrued from long-term adverse events. This slide, it really just makes the point that you can do sensitivity analysis with cost-effectiveness modeling. And one thing that's useful about it, I think, is that if you have some things in mind that you want to do and you know something about what it's going to cost, you can actually try to figure out if they're realistic. Some of our conclusions that we found out about the chronic care model is that leadership is really key to success. It's never all or one implementation. These are very tough populations to serve, and usually adoption has been pretty disease specific. We found that under some assumptions, namely modest costs, whatever that means, modest improvements in key clinical indicators, it's pretty cost effective to do these kinds of things. And the cholesterol appears much easier to control than blood pressure. Everybody seemed to have good success with that. I think the point is that how can these methods be used moving forward as we talk about medical homes and other practice transformation efforts? Even if they weren't cost effective, I'm sure people would still try to keep working and improving practice, but maybe we'd have more attention to it if we knew a little bit more about some results of cost effectiveness studies and had better measures. And I think it's important to remember that practice transformation is not quite the same as supplemental services. So when you apply these methods to broad-based medical homes or quality improvement efforts, it can be hard, it can be a little tricky. We use this sort of supplemental services approach. That's really all I wanted to say today. Thank you.